All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, September 8th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is an extremely muggy 78 degrees and very cloudy here in upstate New York. It apparently rained all night and feels like Florida. The forecast actually says high of 88 with a real feel of 95 today. So should be lots of fun. I guess they flipped that switch back to summer, at least for this week. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Rise of the Superbug Takeover and the Microscopic Arms Race. And we've been talking about some of the mad science that has been going on for quite a long time now, connecting the dots between some of the older biowarfare programs that were going on in this country back World War II, but even before, if you dig back into it and you could tie it to some of the Operation Paperclip, go to Fort Detrick and Plum Island and take a look at some of the stuff that they were doing there. And we now have found ourselves in a really scary boat when we look at what is happening in the laboratory, in the Petri dish, completely unbounded, without any oversight or real security. I mean, maybe in some of the military installations, yeah, they got biosecurity level 4. But we also find out that there have been lots of accidents, reported and unreported, that have occurred. And the ones that we know about are just the very itty-bitty tip of the iceberg. You know, we're also looking now, of course, because of climate change, we have Zika everywhere. I just found a story, and I don't know, maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow. Verstein Henry is supposed to be coming back on for the whole show since we were cut so short with technical difficulties 2 weeks ago Friday. But one of the things maybe we'll talk about is some of the Zika insanity, and they just dug up some connections between the Florida governor, who just gave the blessing to not only spraying very dangerous pesticides that, I'd have to verify this myself, but a friend just told me yesterday that the pesticides that they are spraying for Zika are banned in Europe. So that'd be interesting to discover for ourselves. But they've found connections now between the governor, Florida governor's wife, and the Zika remediation, mosquito remediation company that is taking charge. And we have Oxitec, who's chomping at the bit. They got their FDA approval. And now they're voting in November, we read the other day, about whether or not those GMO mosquitoes will be released in the Florida Keys. And that's a very scary place to be, because once these genies have been out in the wild and breeding with the native populations, I mean, we've discovered they can do anything with CRISPR. You know, 2 days ago, the show that we did on Tuesday, titled, I think it was Tuesday, CRISPRing Mosquitoes, Humans, Woolly Mammoths, and Dinner, they are gods. They can turn life into manufacturing facilities for whatever crazy viral bacterial drug DNA morphing creation that they want. I mean, I don't think that there's any holds bar at this point. So we ran across a story right at the end of the show yesterday titled Startups Artificial DNA Could Revolutionize Drug Design. And one of the things, as we were reading this, we found out was that this was the same technology that's creating two additional proteins in a DNA strand that we had read about a few years back. And I, during the show yesterday, was trying to find the clip that we had heard, but it was too difficult while I was talking. Talking and typing doesn't always work out too well. But hey, don't fret. Because guess what I found? Here, we're going to listen to this. Scientists create organism with artificial DNA. And this was from May 8th. Oh, hold on, hold on. May 8th of 2014. Let's see if my volume is, yeah, it's cranked. All right, here we go.
Tonight we are hearing more about a major medical breakthrough. For the first time, scientists have created artificial DNA, the universal genetic code. Dr. John LaPook tonight tells us about the hopes and fears that come with this.
Scientists at the Scripps Research Institute in San Diego, California, created an organism not found in nature. They did it by adding artificial genetic building blocks. DNA is the genetic material the body uses to store the unique blueprint for each human being. The information exists as a code based on four chemicals, nicknamed A, T, C, and G. They pair up with each other in different combinations to create 20 amino acids, the building blocks of proteins. The Scripps team created two artificial chemicals called X and Y. They inserted them inside the cells of simple bacteria. That created the potential for 172 amino acids and proteins that do not currently exist. Those proteins could be used to create a new generation of drugs and vaccines.
Ding! A new generation of drugs and vaccines. You know what I find interesting, too, is that they take the ATCG, and by making these two synthetic chemicals, they could have named them something like Q and X, or Q and Z, let's say. But no, they called them X and Y, which is going to cause less alarm from the unsuspecting public because, hey, we already know X and Y, male, female. You know, those already exist. But no, these aren't X and Y, male and female. These are X and Y DNA amino acids that are completely different. They just happen to call them the same things, okay? These are not male and female genes. These are artificial DNA amino acids.
Adriana Heggie is the director of the Genome Technology Center at NYU Langone Medical Center.
What I think is fantastic about this technology is that we basically were able to cheat evolution and to trick this organism into accepting molecules that do not exist in nature.
My God, did you hear that? They tricked the organism to accept molecules that do not exist in nature. And something else that we found out in reading this story yesterday out of MIT Technology Review was that they've gotten the cells to reproduce. So they literally are creating an artificial organism that can reproduce. And remember, we found out too, they can pass down these artificial amino acids to future generations. This is no holds barred. A new life form, people.
This is a true technological tour de force, but the idea of tinkering with genetic material does make some people nervous. It all underscores the importance of careful thought as we increasingly are able to alter the basic genetic building blocks of our body.
John, thank you.
So yeah, let's proceed with a little bit of caution, but we're finding that caution is just a whisper in the wind because there really is no high-level security in any of these university facilities. I mean, yeah, like we've said, white coats and lateral gloves, maybe a mask. But a lot of these organisms can be spread, especially something that is part of the microbiome in your gut, let's say, can be spread through spores. And spores, if we know anything about fungus, propagate very easily and can be spread from place to place very easily. And they had warned that some of these researchers in the past, we found out about that tularemia outbreak in Boston, the researchers could become infected and not even know and then go home. And again, ding, ding, Typhoid Mary, some of these organisms could accidentally or maybe accidentally on purpose be released into the wild. So the company we were looking at that had been working on this has spun out an IPO, and they have called themselves Synthorx, S-Y-N-T-H-O-R-X. I found a story yesterday. Synthorx raises $10 million to expand the use of synthetic DNA in biologics. And remember when we were reading about the TPP and the TTIP, one of the things that was mentioned in there was biologics and how biologics were going to have extended patents, I believe, was the whole scenario in that. And we had called biologics at that time. Really, all we knew about was switch flipping and RNAi and manipulating some of the genetic code by turning things on and off. Well, this is now, I mean, just in the last 6, 8, 10, 12 months that we've been talking about this on a daily basis, just about, we are now to the point where we could CRISPR, we could turn bacteria into little manufacturing facilities and Trojan horse them inside of cells. We can create DNA and make little electrical circuits out of it, little molecular origami DNA machines that are programmed with a cellular language to perform functions inside of a living organism. And I know it sounds absolutely bizarrely dystopian, but we've covered every single bit of that. And this has been out of medical journals and research publications that we've been reading this stuff from. So anyway, this story is from July 20th, 2016. So this is just a few months back. Synthorx raises $10 million to expand the use of synthetic DNA, yes, X and Y, making now 172 amino acids versus the puny human 20. And they're going to use them in these new biologics treatments, in vaccines and gene therapy. Synthorx, a San Diego synthetic biology startup that expanded the number of DNA base pairs with two synthetic nucleotides. Yes, we just heard about it, X and Y. Said today that it raised $10 million in a Series B financing round led by RA Capital Management, the Boston Life Sciences Hedge Fund. And I'm sure they have lots of interesting clients that they help venture capitalist fund. The existing investors, Avalon Ventures and Correlation Ventures, joined in the round, and the San Diego firms have invested $6 million since 2014 when Synthorx was found. An unnamed pharmaceutical company, Ding, is also providing additional undisclosed funding under a drug development deal signed in February. The new funding represents a shift from proof of concept, which means in the lab, to demonstrating how a promising research breakthrough in synthetic biology, ding ding, can be used to produce new biologics drugs at a commercial scale. Yeah, you know what I hear? Drum roll, please. The 21st Century Cures Act will be coming to a Congress floor near you very soon. You know, remember, we go from the lab to clinical trials. We prey on the dying and desperate to offer new 21st century cures. And damn you, FDA, don't get in the way. You are causing people to die by standing in the way, questioning whether or not these treatments are safe. And we, big pharmaceutical companies, are going to make bazillions on this stuff. We get our free R&D line item budget reduced to zero with you allowing us to have human guinea pigs. Says this new funding represents a shift from proof of concept, like I said, in the laboratory, to demonstrating how promising research breakthrough in synthetic biology can be used to produce new biologic drugs at a commercial scale. That means to your doctor's office, and they will be promised Hawaiian vacations if they get you to try it. The company plans to use the proceeds to double its headcount from 8 to 16 employees and to finance the development of new protein-based drugs that incorporate at least one synthetic amino acid. Now, when you take these drugs, does that now cause you to become something that doesn't exist on this planet? Will that synthetic X or Y created synthetic amino acid interact with your DNA? Will it incorporate itself into your being? Are those X and Ys patented? And if they become a part of your being, does that mean that part of your being has become patented? I would have to say that these are all very good questions now that this insane, complete lunatic, literally alien DNA on planet Earth is going to be released from this glowing green genie bottle with stinky fumes. You ever saw old Scooby-Doo episodes from the 70s? I think they had a genie bottle that looked like that in an episode somewhere. Just like that. I hear really scary music playing in the background. Like out of the Disney film where all the enchanted objects started dancing on the table. This is beyond frightening, guys. This is it. I mean, they've been tinkering with lower forms of life, but this is creating. This is like George Church's wet dream, and I'm surprised I haven't seen his name here somewhere. He's got to be like a consultant. I will guarantee you if we look into Synthorax's background, George Church had to have had conversations with somebody here. We'll look. I'll look tomorrow. But we literally have now created. This isn't a fully synthetic human genome like Georgie Porgy wants, but this is the next step. This is the step up that ladder. We are now incorporating synthetic DNA and having it reproduce. Now, you know what? Let's see. We're going to go back to that story we read yesterday. Startup's artificial DNA could revolutionize drug design, because I am pretty certain. Reproduce. No. Replicate. Ah, here we go. I knew we'd find it. In 2012, this is Romesburg. Remember Romesburg from the Scripps Institute in San Diego? Romesburg's lab in 2012 published the creation of X and Y, and in 2014, he showed that bacterial cells could replicate and propagate genes containing X and Y into future generations. So there you go. There's no doubt that this can be passed down. So how is it going to affect us, and how is it going to evolve us? And shouldn't that be part of anything that's published here? I mean, I don't see anything about any of these technologies providing informed consent. Even down to today's vaccinations, you know, it's horrifying. As I learn more and more about the lack of controls with contamination that is going on and has been going on for generations now. In the vaccines, they're finding hairs and they're finding errant cells from three or four different animals where it only should be one. And all this shit's been injected into generations of humans. And then we listened to an interview, and I don't remember whose it was. This was probably a month or two ago, with a scientist talking about how throughout evolution, and they've looked at all kinds of fossil evidence, and now they're DNA sequencing everything, so they could look at stuff from way, way back. You know, they're cloning the woolly mammoth, for God's sake. That this is the most rapid time right now in the last 100 years that evolution has happened on a DNA scale. Like, they've never seen this before, looking through the archaeological and the DNA genomic records. And now, you know, we always suspected it, but I pretty much think with all those dots that we've connected back to the original biowarfare program and tinkering with these mad science experiments, even way back then. I mean, fast forward 70 plus years and where we're at right now. This stuff is just coming out because now they can make bazillions of dollars and offer it to you as a cure. Because God forbid, now that CRISPR has been launched across and democratized across the planet, gene editing has become a weapon of mass destruction. So the government is involved because it's all in the name of national security. Just like these superbugs, it's all going to come and get us. They're hiding under our beds and in our closets. So anyway, this artificial DNA is proof of concept The company plans to use the proceeds to double its headcount. And in its quest to develop new biologics, Synthorix has focused on potential products for treating pain, metabolic diseases, as well as infectious diseases. The company's technology is based on research led by Floyd Romsberg, our good old buddy, a biological chemist at the Scripps Institute in San Diego. And in addition to the four standard nucleotides that comprise DNA, our friends ACTG, Romsberg team showed that a novel synthetic DNA-based pair, X and Y, could be inserted into bacterial DNA that reproduced with no change in the altered DNA. The initial goal at Synthorax was to use the technique developed in Romsberg's lab to insert synthetic DNA into what? Oh, good old E. coli. And to make proteins that incorporate synthetic amino acids, and the recombinant protein therapeutics already have had a dramatic impact in medicine, and examples abound, such as insulin for diabetes and monoclonal antibodies in cancer immunotherapies. Ding! Good old immunotherapies. We've already seen some of that. I have not seen anything about the Chinese experiment that was supposed to have happened in August, but they are sucking T cells out of humans, genetically modifying those T cells and then injecting them back into humans and calling it immunotherapy. But many protein therapeutics have limitations that stall their advance. For example, certain proteins are only effective if they are folded in a particular way. And that's one thing that we should be realizing is that this is some stuff that Clint Richardson has talked at length about. And when I first heard him, I couldn't believe that someone else had actually paid attention to proteins and misfolded proteins, because that is very prevalent in diseases such as mad cow disease or bovine spongiform encephalopathy, chronic wasting diseases. They are caused by prions being misfolded proteins that cause degeneration and big holes to form in our brains. And very interestingly enough, so we're talking about these custom folded proteins as a new way to create drugs utilizing these two synthetic amino acids, these brand spanking new ones, X and Y. There was a story that came out mid-August of this year, August 16, 2016, and I am pretty certain that this is talking about some of the similar stuff. And if we remember, there's a whole thing out of MIT and Weiss Institute with origami. If you remember, when they were creating the RoboBees, they came up with this whole new manufacturing way using this miniaturized origami to be able to mass manufacture these RoboBees, because in the original beginning, they were doing them by hand, if you can imagine. And it was very slow going, they said. But they came up with this manufacturing processes utilizing origami, which is the ancient, I don't know if it's Chinese, Japanese, but Asian, of course, ancient Asian folding art. My daughter had a whole thing on origami with all these pretty colored papers and gave me the book somebody gave her for Christmas. It was a pretty neat little toy. And it really required some thought, because everything had to fold perfectly to create this object. But they put a lot of engineering into that at MIT and came up with a way to manufacture things utilizing origami. Well, it progressed from the RoboBees and it went into proteins and DNAs, and they came up with all these little origami folded DNA robots. Well, listen to this. Molecular origami, molecular as in nanotechnology and molecular machines. And our good old buddy there, the granddaddy of nanotech, and I can't remember his name, as open I would, I'll remember. But that's where it came from, was MIT. Be interesting to see if that's where this came from. Molecular origami, protein engineering emerges to fight disease. Creating molecules that do not exist in nature could give drug design a boost. And yeah, that's exactly what this is. I'm sure this is talking about the X and Y. Protein engineer Aaron Chevalier has a hunch that origami on a smaller scale could be the future of drug design. So he and a team at the University of Washington spent their days designing intricately folded chains of amino acids to create molecules that do not exist in nature. And this goal, well, was to create a protein that might bind to a virus like the flu and then stop it from infecting cells, or one that could break up gluten, effectively taming gluten allergies. You could imagine a future where we were able to design people, an essentially unlimited number of new proteins that basically are the drugs of the future, the vaccines of the future, says David Baker, a biochemist who leads the university's Institute for Protein Design. Naturally, caveats abound. For one, it is unclear, ding ding, if our immune system will accept these new proteins they have never seen before. Oh my goodness. Guys, this actually is something a little bit different. This isn't even talking about using X and Ys to create proteins, though maybe they are and they're just not mentioning it yet. But this is at least talking about creating designer proteins, which is very similar to what they were discussing from this Synthorix company. But this is someplace completely different. Guys, Biology 101 is at the end of the line. This is full engineering of creation of life and then releasing that new life. Never before seen. They said it. We've seen it in two stories in the last 2 days. Never before seen. And they're going to launch it into our human bodies. Well, damn our immune system. Maybe we could get a synthetic DARPA immune system and then program it to be able to recognize, think about this, these new synthetic proteins. We could just take our new download, recognize this one as a good guy, and then they could circumvent our puny human immune system. I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it. Anyway, for one, it is unclear if our immune systems will accept new proteins they have never seen before, because these could create new allergies, but the body could also reject them, or they could turn out not to work in real life, even if they look good on a computer screen. So yes, they're saying we need humans now. And in practical terms, it will likely be years before any of these newly designed proteins make their way to our medicine cabinets. Like any drug, you always have to experimentally test it before you stick it into a person. Well, thank goodness. But then remember, you can always experimentally test it on a person in the name of the dead and the soon-to-be dying as a miracle cure. Yang Zhang. We've read about Yang Zhang before. Yang Zhang, a professor of biological chemistry at the University of Michigan, is also engineering proteins. So we got to love a protein engineer named Yang Zhang. He said Baker's work is promising, but turning a theoretical protein into a functional therapeutic will take time because the proteins will effectively be interacting with an entire system, yes, like the human body, and not just the target it is intended for. It is a very complicated process for a drug. You need to consider not only these interactions, but you also need to consider the side effects or the interactions with the environment and many other protein pathways. On a summer afternoon, Chevalier demonstrated the principle of protein folding to a group of students visiting the lab by folding and unfolding an origami cup. That's hard, he said, but designing a new molecule to fight disease is even harder. And it's not just figuring out folding a cup. It's like you want the cup to be stiff or to hold water, or it needs to last a long time. Proteins are the workhorses of the human body, and there are millions out there that are evolution approved and running our bodies with Swiss watch precision. Ding, ding, like I said, nature has had millions, if not billions, of years to perfect itself And here we are, puny little humans, thinking that we can not only replicate and synthesize these billions, I'll say billions, of years of evolution, but we could create directed evolution. And we looked at that. That's really something that they're working on, being able to eliminate genetic diseases and change traits. They want to be able to direct evolution on a grand scale across species. You know, that gene drive that we've read about a few times and has come up in different literature and in different conversations, like with Georgie Church, that gene drive and with the genetically modified mosquitoes, mind you, Bill and Melinda Gates are right in the middle of it. That gene drive can push a genetic change in one generation through an entire population of organisms. So think about the energy and the power behind that. And then behind some of the science that we're reading about, for them to be able to genetically engineer not only life, but we're talking like life on a grand scale. And then the power of gene drives. And this is just not, I'm telling you, these people that are in charge are not the white angels that are going to save us from impending doom. If that were the case and I felt like I could trust them, even a few percent, I might say maybe, just maybe. But this is all being funded. Sprinkle funding all comes and roots back to Department of Defense initiatives, and anything that has been sprinkle funded by the Department of Defense, just know that there's always ulterior motives. They have our children working in these university labs, coming up with all these discoveries so they could get published and win more grants from more federal agencies who have an invested interest in mad science gone mad. Just remember that anything that is a curing machine can also be a killing machine and used in the name of biowarfare. Anyway, protein engineering is about designing them to work together in novel ways to battle sickness, says Don Hilvert, a professor of organic chemistry at ETH Zurich in Switzerland, who collaborates. So I don't know. How much more do we want to read about engineering? If you think about antibodies, they evolve to be circulating in your bloodstream. And they aren't necessarily evolved to be packaged and stored without the need for refrigeration. They aren't designed to be produced in a large scale to be soluble or to be concentratable. They hope that by starting from scratch, they can make a single protein with all of those characteristics, which in theory could become the basis for a low-cost, shelf-stable drug. So, well, I don't know. This next generation of medications are going to be more than drugs. These are not going to be just a drug that you put into your body. These are going to be organisms that take substances that can literally manipulate your being, your makeup at a level that we've never seen before. And it's all man-directed. We read a story out of Motherboard back in July. Scientists build a biological computer inside of a cell. This will be to refresh your memory so we can take a look at some of this other weird stuff we came up with. MIT engineers have developed biological computational circuits capable of both remembering and responding to sequential input data. And I mean, this just underscores how far they have gotten, where they can put little biological computers inside of cells themselves. And then we can get these cells inside of people as part of the new biologics programs. The group's work, which is described in this week's issue of Science, represents a critical step in the progression of synthetic biology with the integration of DNA-based memory, ding, pointing the way toward building large computational systems from biological components, computing devices that are living cells, and ultimately programming complex biological functions. Now, let's just think about this for a minute. Guys, they have gotten to where there is no limitation. Life is being programmed. I would not doubt that there are things in the laboratory that are way beyond our possible even imaginations. This is Nathaniel Roquette and his colleagues at WHERE, MIT Synthetic Biology Group. We're able to implement within a living cell what is known as a state machine, an abstract mathematical model describing a computation as a list of distinct internal states paired with an associated list of operations required to transition from state to state. In other words, allowing them to program algorithms and make things happen. In a living cell, DNA is the natural candidate for storing state information. After all, that's what DNA does. We've talked about them already using DNA as a storage medium. They were able, I don't remember which group, maybe it was Microsoft, it was one of them, have been working on using DNA to store material, and I think they coated it in glass. It could potentially last for billions of years as well. And it was a huge amount of storage, like anything and everything that had ever happened on planet Earth, and every wing beating of every butterfly could be stored in like a pound of DNA. But they are able to now program and make little programmable machines inside of cells. This group in particular was working on what? Oh, E. coli. Yes, E. coli seems to be everywhere. To react to several substances commonly used in biological laboratory experiments, including, yes, tetracycline and a sugar called arbutinase. We read this story before, but the scary point of this is that computers have become alive. Perhaps not in the way many of us have anticipated, though. No, I haven't. This is beyond insane. A unicellular organism itself won't ever be packing much computational horsepower, but it is considered as a building block, and if you do, the potential is pretty wild. Yeah, well, let's just network them all together. It's part of the Internet of Everything. Put little wireless biosensors inside of there, and there's lots and lots and lots of them. We saw a story back last week. This one's been queued up here for a while. Analog DNA circuit does math. Yes, it does math in a test tube. DNA computers could one day be programmed to what? Diagnose and treat disease. Guys, are these the same little programmable DNA that we were just looking at back from July at MIT? Because now those little programmed cells, DNA, not even cells, DNA, can be programmed with math and algorithms to be our little internal DNA doctors? Well, maybe. Researchers at Duke University have created strands of what? Synthetic DNA. Ding a ding a ding. And when mixed together in a test tube in the right concentrations, form an analog circuit that can, and put on a seatbelt, hold on to your chair, an analog circuit that can add, subtract, and multiply as the molecules form and break bonds. And while most DNA circuits are digital, their device performs calculations in an analog fashion by measuring the varying concentrations of specific DNA molecules directly without requiring special circuitry to convert them into zeros and ones first. Ding, ding, ding. Oh my goodness. Often described as the blueprint of life, DNA contains the instructions for making every living thing, from a human to a housefly. But in recent decades, some researchers have been putting the letters of the genetic code to a different use. That use would be making tiny nanoscale computers. In a new study, a Duke University team led by Professor John Reif created strands of synthetic DNA that, when mixed together in a test tube in the right concentrations, forms an analog circuit that can add, subtract, and multiply as they form and break bonds. Rather than using voltage, these DNA circuits use concentrations of specific DNA strands as signals. And other teams have designed DNA-based circuits that can solve problems ranging from calculating square roots to playing tic-tac-toe. What? Inside of DNA. But most DNA circuits are digital, where information is encoded as a sequence of ones and zeros. But instead, the new Duke device performs calculations in an analog fashion by measuring various degrees of specific DNA molecules directly without requiring the circuitry to convert them to zeros and ones. The research described their approach in the August issue of the journal ACS Synthetic Biology. Unlike the silicon-based circuits used in most modern-day electronics, commercial applications of DNA circuits are still a long way off. For one, the test tube calculations are slow, and it can take hours to get an answer. Well, phew, thank God it's slow. But we can do some limited computing, and we can't even begin to think of competing with modern-day PCs or other conventional computing devices. He says, don't worry about it. But these DNA circuits can be far tinier than those made of silicon. And unlike electronic circuits, DNA circuits work well in wet environments, such as slopping around inside your cells, which make them useful for computing inside of the bloodstream. Yes, and we read yesterday, I think it was yesterday, maybe the day before, of them creating lasers out of the blood and inside the bloodstream. So, hey, that sounds like a perfect pairing. Or it might make it useful for computing inside of the soupy, cramped quarters of a cell. Yep, and of course, it doesn't have to be lightning fast. We could have slow bloodstream or cell computers. Don't worry about it, Johnny. This technology takes advantage of DNA's natural ability to what? Oh, zip and unzip. To perform computations. Zip, 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 zip. So, man, we got all kinds of crazy shit going on here. We got DNA analog computers that natively convert to zeros and ones without any high-tech anything that work in great wet environments, such as the bloodstream or the soupy, sloppy internals of a cell. And they do zip and unzipping noises to be able to make computations. Oh, my goodness. Just like Velcro and magnets have complementary hooks and poles, these nucleotide bases of DNA pair up with and bind in a predictable way. The researchers first create short pieces of synthetic DNA. Oh, yeah, and we have synthetic DNA as well. Some single-stranded, some double-stranded with single-stranded ends, and they mix them in a test tube. And when the single strands encounter a perfect match at the end of one of the partially double-stranded ones, it latches on and it binds, displacing the previously bound strand, causing it to detach like someone cutting in on a dancing couple. This newly released strand can in turn pair up with other complementary DNA molecules downstream in a circuit, creating our favorite domino effect. Gotta love domino effects because you usually can't stop them once they've started. The researchers solve math problems by measuring the concentrations of specific outgoing strands as a reaction reaches equilibrium and to see how their circuits would perform over time as the reaction proceeds. Reif and Duke graduate student Tianqi Song use computer software to simulate the reactions over a range of input concentrations, and they have also been testing the circuit experimentally in the lab. So it's in a petri dish. Besides addition, subtraction, and multiplication, the researchers are also designing more sophisticated analog DNA circuits that could do wider ranges of calculations, such as logarithms and exponentials. Conventional computing went digital decades ago, but for DNA computing, the analog approach has its advantages. For one, analog DNA circuits require fewer strands of DNA than digital ones. Analog circuits are also better suited for sensing signals that don't lend themselves to a simple on-off or all-or-none value, such as vital signs, ding, 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 and other physiological measurements involved in diagnosing and treating disease. That hope is that in the distant future, in the not so distant future, such devices could be programmed to sense whether particular blood chemicals lie inside or outside of a range of values considered to be normal, ding, ding, defective humans, and then have them release a specific DNA or RNA that has a drug like effect. Ding, 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 bloodstream doctors to the rescue. Reef's lab is also beginning to work on DNA-based devices that could detect molecular signatures of particular types of what? Oh, cancer cells to sell it to the masses and release substances that then spur an immune system to fight back. Quote, even very simple DNA computing could still have huge impacts in medicine or in science. What do you think of them apples, people? That is beyond scary. Not only do we have them looking at analog biological sensors made out of synthetic DNA that are very well adapted living in wet environments like inside the body to be programmed to diagnose and then treat disease on the fly unattended. It's a very scary thought. Now, talking about a little more mad science, we've been looking at a lot of the DARPA research into the brain and a lot of the different things that have come out of the Brain Project so far. There's a global initiative called the Brain Initiative to be able to crack all the secrets and discover what makes us tick, what buttons to push, what chemicals need to be produced. They've been looking at that gut-brain axis and the whole ElectRx program and stimulation via electrical shocks and different little wire zippity zaps to be able to make things happen. We also found that they'd been messing around with creating artificial neurons that had capability to be light sensitive and then utilizing that light to be able to turn neurons on and off. That whole science has now gotten a name called optogenetics. If you want to read more about it, it's opto, O-P-T-O, genetics. And it's pretty interesting. There's a story that came out back end of last year. Light-activated neurons hold bright promise for brain science. And, you know, as we've been reading more and more about optogenetics, read some horrifying experiments. One that I remember in particular is where they inserted nanowires into the brains of moths that were in pupal stage. And by the time the moth morphed to become a full-grown, large, beautiful moth, that was one of those really pretty big ones with all the pretty designs on its back, it had these nanowires deeply embedded into its cortex where it could then be remotely controlled by researchers for its wings and making it fly certain directions. I was so disturbed by that video. They called it a cyborg. They've been also doing research very similar to that with roaches. They had the cyborg roach experiment videos with different types of things inserted. We had roaches with nanorobots that were running around live inside of it just recently, allowing them to control different facets of its biology. Well, a lot of that research is going toward being able to manipulate and control the brain. Well, listen to this one. When Edward Boden was helping to develop a tool to turn neurons on and off with light at Stanford. Again, another lizard's pit a decade ago. He had a strong feeling it would spread far and wide. And even so, he's been surprised at how quickly its fame has come. Remember, all this stuff, all these mad science experiments on humans, animals, bugs, plants, is all coming out of these same institutions that all have gotten funding from good old DARPA at some point, or the National Institute of Health, or the CDC. All in the name of keeping us safe and curing disease, but remember, it all ties back to warfare and protecting us from the boogeyman. Keeping costs down and making $1 billion for the IPOs that are spun out. All made up of venture funding capitalists, rich tech billionaires, and big pharma, as well as the militarized industrial complex. What I hadn't quite anticipated, says Boyden, is how fast it would take off. Boyden, who now leads the what MIT Media's synthetic neurology research group, and it was almost as if the field itself was ready for the technology. And it certainly was. Boyden and Stanford neuroscientist Dr. Carl Dozeroff, whose lab Boyden had worked in, each received a $3 million breakthrough prize for their work on optogenetics. Scientists around the world have embraced the technology and are now using it to study everything from behavior. Remember all these behavior analytics that are going into a lot of the artificial intelligence studies. Remember artificial intelligence and high-end computing, cloud computing is all happening simultaneously with these other disruptive technologies. It's all a part of the same massive experiment that is ongoing right now. But behavioral analytics is a big deal because they want to be able to diagnose pre-crime and to be able to diagnose defective humans in many different ways and then cure you for your own good. But it has been used in allowing them to study everything from behavior to learning to brain disease. Now, don't forget, we haven't talked about him in a while, but good old Tommy Insel and Google. Tommy Insel, the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, went over to Google's Verily Life Sciences division, and they are working on ways to cure mental illness from a mad science perspective, as well as diagnosing, utilizing technologies. This work has mostly been in rodent models, but now, for the very first time, a clinical trial, ding ding, will be using optogenetics to try to treat a genetic form of blindness. So we got two buzzwords, curing a genetic disease and treating blindness using some sort of mad science therapy in the brain. There are just huge frontiers out there for which optogenetics will be one of our four most powerful tools, says Robert Desmond, director of the McGovern Institute of Brain Research at MIT. Optogenetics makes living neurons sensitive to light by introducing special genes, ding, carried by a virus, ding, old school genetic modification, which produce then photoreceptive proteins, ding, ding, and then by shining a light on those cells, generally with a fiber optic wire, yes, those little nanowires, scientists can either activate or suppress particular groups of neurons, exploring how different parts of the brain work and how they communicate with the rest of the brain. Well, here we go, guys. Here's a new story now out of, fast forward a year, IEEE Spectrum. Injectable nanowires monitor mouse brains for months. Want to understand what happens to the brain as it ages or figure out how people learn to recognize faces? Well, neurologists asking such questions or struggling to deal with brain degeneration. caused by Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, or maybe by all the nanoparticles you're inhaling from your pollution. And I think that's where we're going to have to kick that off tomorrow. Might get some insight from detailed observations of the brain circuitry over time. And up until now, this information has been hard to come by. But now who? Researchers at Harvard, ding ding, have shown that they can track brain activity at the level of individual neurons for months at a time using a tiny electronic mesh that can be injected directly into the brain. A group led by Charles Lieber, a professor of chemistry at Harvard, reports in this week's Nature Methods that they were able to record. Remember, we've talked about recording neural activity. That is definitely something that's going to be part of our not too distant future. They'll be able to tell if Johnny is having thoughts of insurrection and automatically have a little DNA origami protein or whatever the hell we were just reading about. Create some sort of little zippity-zap drug to make that nasty thought go away. They reported this week in Nature Methods that they were able to record the neural activity of mice over 8 months. 8 whole months. Long enough to see how the animal's brain changed as they entered the mouse's version of middle age. So not only are they looking at motivation, but now they are starting to look at how aging and being able to target individual groups, people. Remember, behind all of this is a very large, very old eugenics program. And, you know, there have been lots of cries. Bill Gates coming out at a TED conference talking about how we need to get that carbon quotient down to zero. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It is Thursday. Lots of radio tonight. Mr. Kevin Blanche live up next. Have an awesome Thursday, and I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.
On the Tracks, you can catch every Monday night at 9.